Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Trashy Divorces. I'm Alicia.
My name is Stacy. We hope you've had a lovely Christmas and holiday season in general.
So much. It's a ho-ho-ho and a bottle of rum today.
It is.
Stacy, we've got two fantastically trashy family kind of episodes.
Yes.
To bring y'all on what? The end of
season 12.
For us on Trashy Divorces.
Mm-hmm.
So exciting.
Yep. End of year 3 of Trashy Divorces. It is our great privilege to do this every week.
We are so lucky. Thank you. Trash Pandas. What are y'all going to hear today in the first half, Stacy?
We've got the origin story of the Marvel Cinematic Universe's Napoleon Bonaparte. The Trashy Divorces Cinematic Universes.
We pulled an episode out of Trashy Bonaparte's a few weeks ago. This is the origin story to it, to counter in our trashy
what
family.
What you got?
Battle today. I got some trashy Plantagenets.
Deep cut.
I call this episode, Oh Brother.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Richard the Lionheart, who was not lionhearted at all.
Mm-hmm.
And his terrible brother, King John. There's only been one King John, about their wives who either got treated trashily or were trashy. Everybody's trashy in the story in the reign of this Plantagenet period. It is from our Patreon series called Grab Your Hankies.
Sure, about the King's Henry of England.
That's exactly it, which is going to be coming back in the new year. So, two fun, you think your family is bad episodes today.
We will make you feel better.
We will make you feel
about
better.
Your family situation.
Trashy family values right here on Trashy Divorces. We're going to pull out our festive magic mirror and give some shout outs and thanks and praise to our newest supporters.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us at patreon.com/trashydivorces. Karen T, Lisa L, Kate F, and Brooke W.
Holy cats, Tabitha L, thank you for becoming our newest super supporter as well. We have a few trashy shout-outs to give to Kat and Sarah and Casey. Thank you for your Christmas cards and Christmas prezzies and greetings. Y'all are the best.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got presents for everybody, too. Everybody's in the magic mirror this week. All of our Trash Pandas, we got presents for you. For everybody on our free bit.ly link, which is
bit.ly/trashcandy. Just plug it into your browser.
I've got the first Grab Your Hankies is up there, along with the British Peerage Explained episode. For all patrons on Patreon, we are dropping the whole Trashy Bonaparte series to everyone. We had so much fun with that. I think everyone will enjoy that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So enjoy your bonus listening if you have some spare time between now and whenever.
Yeah, happy bonus episodes and holiday listening. We're going to be taking a break next week.
Indeed.
Into season 12.
We're coming back January 5th.
For Trashy Breakups.
With Trashy Breakups to kick off our 13th season, our fourth year podcasting. It's going to be a big deal, probably.
Season 13.
Uh-huh.
It's going to get spooky.
Lucky 13.
It's going to be so great. Y'all, please enjoy this holiday episode.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. We are humongous fans of you. And we will talk to you again on January 5th.
That's exactly it. Happy everything, y'all.
Alicia, is it time to ho, ho, ho?
We better go, go, go. Oh, Stacy, we're getting trashy French today. We're crossing the channel. We're leaving England behind.
We are. We have set out in a boat. We are rowing.
Whoosh, whoosh.
Final status agreement of Calais handled.
Poor Calais.
Yeah, so for the next few weeks, actually, we're going to be talking about the surprisingly or not trashy family the Bonapartes, Napoleon being the most prominent.
I mean, we've talked a little bit about Empress Eugenie, Napoleon III's wife, sure, and the Charles Frederick Worth gowns. Like, we've seen the after effects, but right, we're getting into the origin story.
The origin story, indeed. What a family. So today we're going to talk about...
Are they the trashiest family you've encountered?
I think they
may be.
I think so. We will know by the end of like the next six episodes or whatever.
Oh, I can't wait. Go.
Today we're specifically going to talk about Napoleon and Josephine.
Allons-y. See, that was right in French, right? Let's go.
I believe.
Allons-y.
I believe.
See? Doctor Who, man.
It was Tennant.
The doctor.
It was the Tennant doctor.
Teaches us stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, shit. I'll get my bow tie. Let's do it.
Napoleon was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, too, right?
100%.
Yeah.
I think he played the keyboard or something.
Something. The year was 1804, and Napoleon Bonaparte made himself France's emperor. He leveraged his military background, a variety of political alliances, and, you know, his wife's connection to other powerful men.
Sure.
In the, you know, post-revolutionary French government.
So France wasn't like, hey, dude, we'd really like you to be our emperor. He just went in and made himself emperor?
We'll talk about how this all came about. His coronation was held at Notre Dame in Paris. On December 2nd, 1804, and this was a lavish demonstration of his authority, his new imperial authority. It was also a trashy spectacle designed to establish Napoleon not only as France's leader, but as the head of a new dynasty.
Oh!
For a new age.
Fantastic.
In France and in Europe. Napoleon designed the ceremony himself.
Oh, good.
Micromanager.
That always goes well. You should ask Henry VIII.
Borrowing from various traditions of the histories that he loved, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump from like this to Nazi era pageantry.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's okay. The main theme for the event seemed to be gold and more gold. It started with a cannonade at 8 a.m. and a papal procession started an hour later. The Pope was on hand.
Oh, wow.
4,000 spectators waited for Napoleon and Josephine's carriage to travel from the Tuileries to Notre Dame. An unmanned hot air balloon, all the stops were pulled, decorated with 3,000 lights in an imperial crown pattern, was launched from the front of Notre Dame. Napoleon's coronation costume was encrusted in jewels, and his purple velvet mantle was lined in ermine and embroidered in gold.
Cape
of course.
With the fur.
One guest snarked a bit that he looked something like the King of Diamonds from a pack of cards.
Oh, no.
Josephine wore a white gown with a velvet mantle, like Napoleon's. As they approached Notre Dame's altar, Pope Pius VII blessed two imperial crowns and then began to lift one, which Napoleon immediately pulled from his hands and placed on his own head.
Oh, God.
And the Pope is just standing. I mean, like, what?
This may be a little bit early in the story to ask the question, but 1804, within sight of the last generation, there has been a bloody revolution in France to rid itself of the monarchy.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird flex.
I can't imagine that coming out like the new king does great things for the people of France.
Well, you see, Napoleon innovated what we would now refer to, I think, as competitive autocracy. Okay, we'll talk about it.
Okay.
So, yeah, Napoleon just like grabs his crown out of the Pope's hands, puts it on his own head, and then crowns his wife. So, you know, they had a really nice time of it. An observer wrote that both appeared to enjoy one of those fleeting moments of shared felicity, which are unique in a lifetime, as I think he set the crown on her head and then lifted it off again. And he made a show of it. The moment was commemorated in a painting by Jacques-Louis David, which depicts Emperor Napoleon surrounded by supporters and his family.
Sure.
As he crowns Josephine, Letizia Bonaparte watches her son from a balcony while his brothers, Louis and Joseph, observe approvingly. Napoleon's sisters look up adoringly, holding Josephine's mantle. This was all
manufactured.
Totally propaganda. Yeah. Napoleon's family was very much at odds. They were fighting amongst themselves over, I want this title and I don't want to marry that person. And I like, whatever.
How quickly the trappings of monarchy befall you.
What they did agree on, though, was that Josephine sucks. And so unhappy. So Joseph and Napoleon were currently arguing. Joseph and their mother refused to attend the coronation. Letizia also said she would not come to the ceremony to watch Napoleon put a crown on La Putana.
I know what that means.
The whore.
Uh-huh.
Napoleon's sisters reluctantly carried Josephine's train, having been bribed with royal titles.
Oh, God.
One attendee remarked, nothing was more comical than the way in which they performed their duty. One sister sulked, another held smelling salts under her nose, and the third let the mantle drop as Josephine climbed the stairs.
Jesus Christ. This sounds like Mean Girls.
This is, I mean, it's...
This is terrible.
It's like, it's a bad in-law situation for Josephine, that is for sure. Napoleon's coronation was the ultimate achievement that the couple would experience, and it was the beginning of the end of their marriage. They'd been married for 8 years at this point. They had no children. And Napoleon's family was like, if you're an emperor, you got to have an heir, yo. Like,
yeah.
Ditch her. If she's... So the Bonaparte family, the origin story of Napoleon, were kind of a backwater minor nobility, but they had ambition. Their ancestors were Tuscan. They had immigrated to the island of Corsica in the 16th century. Corsica, if you imagine the coastlines of France and Italy, is like an inverted V.
Uh-huh.
Corsica sort of sits in the middle of them.
Yeah.
And
a little tiny island in the Mediterranean. It looks nice.
I bet it's very pretty. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the maternal line of the family, minor Genoese nobility, they weren't wealthy. They were not refined, but they made the most of their opportunities. Napoleon's mother, Maria Letizia Remolino, had been a child bride, married at 14 years old to lawyer Carlo Maria Bonaparte. Carlo was a Corsican nationalist.
Oh, good.
There was a shooting war happening at the time, God. Like for Corsican independence.
Okay.
And so Letizia would go with Carlo on campaigns.
Isabella did that with Ferdinand.
Mm-hmm.
Like they, she I mean, was just as fierce in battle. Like, why, let's go on campaign.
Why stay home? They had a son, Joseph. Then when she was pregnant with Napoleon, she and Carlo were forced to set up house in a cave for a while because the...
He's like Zeus.
The fighting was too intense.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Eventually, they returned to their home in Ajaccio. Ajaccio?
Sure.
Don't know. Where Letizia would give birth to Napoleon. Carlo went on to lead negotiations to separate Corsica from, like, there was no Italian state, so it was a bunch of principalities. So the Republic of Genoa, only to see the French come in and take over in 1769. Carlo and Letizia would have 8 children who survived to adulthood.
Wow.
Which is, yeah, super impressive. Mm-hmm. Good air, clean living, island living. But it does make for some tricky dynamics down the road when one of them becomes the Emperor of France.
Yeah, when my kid crowns himself Emperor of France, how are all the other kids going to feel?
Yeah, right? No, nobody plans. So Napoleon was born in 1769 on Corsica.
Oh, the same year that Corsica is taken over by the French. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is how, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
It turns out Napoleon really enjoyed meddling in the lives of his family members as much as they enjoyed meddling in his. Really, lots of good stuff going on. So they're all going to get titles. They're all going to have arranged marriages, or maybe not all of them. Anyway, lots going on in the Bonaparte family.
Okay.
He was always, you know, once he was powerful, he was always trying to, like, coerce his family members into whatever for the good of France was always the...
oh, sure.
You know, you will be in this unhappy marriage because I for say it is for the good of France. France. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and if they push
back... Do you think
back,
that would work with Inman?
For the good of the podcast.
For the good of France, bury your poop.
Oh my God.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Embarrassing stuff. If they pushed back, if they tried to refuse what Napoleon wanted them to do, he would threaten to, like, remove them from the line of succession and take away their titles and cut them off financially and, like, Bonaparte or Bonaparte.
Hooray, yikes.
All right, so the Bonapartes decided that Napoleon would have a career in the military. sent him off to school to become an officer.
Okay.
He wanted to join the Navy, but Letizia, I don't know, island person, but did not want him drowning. So his career began in 1785. He was commissioned as a second lieutenant in La Frere Artillery Regiment. He remained involved in the Corsican nationalist movement, however, fighting for the cause until 1793. This puts him into his like early mid-20s.
Okay.
23, 24. Political intrigue. You'll be surprised to learn that in the midst of this, Corsica is getting less and less stable. So the entire Bonaparte clan leaves the island and heads into France proper.
Okay.
I am imagining battered pickup trucks.
Beverly Hillbillies.
Yes.
Coming from Corsica.
Yep. What was happening in France at the time?
Yeah, so, this goes like from bad to worse.
Yeah, Napoleon becomes involved in the French Revolution. He's publishing pro-Republican pamphlets. He befriends Maximilian Robespierre.
Oh, Robespierre.
Bonaparte was made an artillery commander of the Republican forces fighting the Royalists. And really, like, quickly, I mean, again, this is a young guy. He's mid-20s.
Young, scrappy, and hungry.
Yep, quickly establishes himself as a gifted military leader. In 1795, Paul de Barras gave Napoleon command of armed forces to suppress a royalist rebellion in Paris proper. And, you know, this went really well. So soon he's promoted, again, mid-20s, promoted to commander of the interior of France and head of the army of Italy.
Wow.
Which I'm sure was busy trying to occupy various Italian provinces. So Paul de Barras was a leader of this new French government. And he did his buddy a solid and introduced him to his former mistress.
Oh, that's nice. I'm done with her.
Rose de Beauharnais. This is Josephine. A little bit older than Napoleon, born 1763. She was elegant. She was charming. And, you know, he's this young guy from the backwater, basically like an Italian minor noble, like marching through France. He was quite happy for the introduction. She liked his ambition and that he really seemed to be going places. Like, he could back his ambition with actual accomplishments.
Right.
He didn't mind that she already had two kids from her previous marriage. He thought she was quite rich and was likely disappointed to find out that, in fact, his friend Paul de Barras had been paying all of her household staff.
Ooh. And,
yeah. So Napoleon didn't care for the name Rose. So
he just renamed her?
It's from her middle name, but yes, he just renamed her.
Okay.
Uh-huh. She has a very long name. In fact, we'll get to it. So they married. They fell in love. They married in a civil ceremony, March 9th, 1796. You'll be surprised to learn that Napoleon's family was not happy.
He has Even just from the beginning.
He has married a widow, a divorcee who is 6 years older, has two children already. And so La Putana was not warmly welcomed into the Bonaparte household.
Oh, no.
So his sisters, Napoleon's sisters, were intimidated by Josephine's sophisticated city ways. So they gossiped about her constantly. I mean, just a viper's nest over here. The brothers would go on and kind of keep tabs, trying to catch her in adultery.
Oh, no.
And, you know, unfortunately, years go by and Napoleon and Josephine do not have any children, which leads to increasing family pressure to ditch her and marry someone younger and perhaps more fertile.
There's a lot going on for Napoleon. A
lot going on. Josephine was born, forgive me, French speakers, Marie-Joseph Rose Tacher de la Pagerie in Martinique. It's quite a mouthful. Caribbean island. It was French territory at the time. Her parents owned a sugarcane plantation there, and so she lived there for a while, but a hurricane hit it in 1766. So Josephine's father, after the hurricane hits, decides that the way to really help the family fortunes is to marry his daughters off to rich Frenchmen.
Makes sense.
So fortunately, Josephine's aunt herself had a lover of a marquis, and the lover had a son who was currently wife hunting.
I got a great idea.
So they shipped Josephine's sister off to marry him.
Okay.
But she dies.
Oh, shit.
But hey, that's okay. They have a spare. So Josephine is paired with Alexander de Beauharnais, son of a marquis, well off. Obviously, this is a good match from her and her family's perspective. Unfortunately, dude bro is super snobby.
Oh no.
Just thinks his new wife is this like provincial rube. It doesn't sound like it was a super happy union. They did have two kids, Eugene and Hortense. So she's still going by Rose at this point because she has not met Napoleon yet. She worked her ass off to become a proper French noblewoman.
Right.
And her husband was just a dick all the time. And he was, affairs are obviously fairly common, but he was super public about his brothel visits.
Oh,
and
no.
He had long-term mistresses. And then one day he accused Rose of infidelity and abandoned her.
Oh, God.
They legally separated. Rose negotiated support for the children and ended up having to borrow money from people, which is how she ended up being kind of in debt and her future lover caring for her household. During the Reign of Terror, Alexander did get his. He was arrested and tried for treason. His head went into a basket. Rose, Josephine, was considered guilty by association and was arrested, but she was released and not, obviously.
Guillotined.
Guillotined. So, you know, she comes out of prison and meets up with her friends from the vaguely noble universe, and like life goes on. She becomes the lover of Paul de Barris, who is important in the new government and a friend of Napoleon's, and this is how they all meet. The marriage started off in a fairly difficult fashion. Napoleon had to leave Paris to take command of the army of Italy. He would send daily letters to Josephine, amorous, sweet, wonderful. She was quite busy with her Paris social life, not a great correspondent. She also met another soldier.
Oh no!
Captain Charles Hippolyte. They were quite taken with each other, and Napoleon's far away. Yeah, he's off in Egypt, learns about the affair, and he's outraged. So
big mad.
Divorce is on the horizon.
Oh God.
His family's thrilled. Like, yeah, go Josephine and Charles Hippolyte. We're big on this pairing.
Oh no.
So, you know, Napoleon obviously consoled himself with a variety of lovers while he was away.
Perfect.
When he returns to Paris, ready to confront Josephine, she's sorry. She apologizes. She's really contrite.
Just missed you so much.
Totally.
Nappy.
That's probably what she called him. You know, they fought and then they had some makeup time. And the next day, Napoleon's brother comes by and he has been collecting all sorts of reports of Josephine's misbehavior while Napoleon has been absent. And he finds the bedroom door locked.
Nappy bones. And getting that, some.
That
nappy, is, bones.
That it, nappy bones. That nappy bones. That nappy bones. I
just
like it.
Just did it. You've had plenty of time to manifest your charm onto my tutors.
Sure.
Nappy bones.
Nappy bones. Napoleon Bonaparte. Nappy bones. Anyway, nappy bones and Josephine were reconciling.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Perhaps loudly. I don't know. I don't know. So his political rise continued after his return to Paris. Like, he had a kind of spotty military record at this point. Like, the campaign in Egypt had gone very poorly. But the French government was a fucking train wreck at the time.
100%, yeah.
They were bankrupt. Uh-huh. Everyone was unpopular except Napoleon, who was,
weird.
I think, a dashing young military commander. He was very popular. Kind of the only one. So he allies himself with Charles Talleyrand, Joseph Fouché, and his brother Lucien, Lucien Bonaparte, Lucy Bones.
Lucy Bones, there we go.
To take power. Again, Josephine had all of these connections with these powerful men, so they just organize a coup d'etat in 1799 and take control.
Fantastic.
Napoleon was named. Napoleon called himself the first consul. No Roman heirs there.
Wow, that's just. Will strike the fear of Nero into you.
Gave himself a term of 10 years. His new government drafted a constitution. They declared the new republic with Napoleon as its dictator. But competitive autocracy, he would hold elections periodically to gauge the opinions of the public.
Sure. How'd that go?
Well, his brother, Lucien, Lucy Bones, he... So There were about 5 million eligible voters in France at the time, and it is thought that there were about 1.5 million legit votes in this plebiscite on the new constitution government dictator. Lucy Bones goes in and makes up another 1.5 million. Like, he doubles the volume of ballots.
Wow.
Basically ballot stuffing on a grand
scale.
So, weirdly, the people of France agreed 99.94% in favor of whatever it is Napoleon was pushing on the ballot that year. Big win. Big win.
Huge win. Election integrity.
So Napoleon and Josephine riding high on the hog. They pick up a house at Chateau Malmaison, about 7 miles outside of Paris. Josephine loved this place and just starts restoring. She's planting gardens, particularly with plants from Martinique. She wanted the feel of home. People were also, obviously, when they came to meet Napoleon, bringing gifts like live animals. And so soon she had sort of a menagerie going. She was a patron of the arts. She worked with Jacques-Louis David, François Girard. There were some fights about her spending, but in general, these two were actually quite happy together,
sure. It
seems like. The lack of heir will become an issue. Josephine was said to never cheat again. Napoleon was said to never be faithful.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, I think at this point, she's quite happy. Also, Napoleon is frequently away on military campaigns across Europe, of course. By 1804, he had consolidated his power, declared himself emperor, and they moved into apartments in the Tuileries, this is a castle that the royals had lived in prior.
Right.
Yes. So Josephine was like kind of blown away. Napoleon carried her over the threshold of the bedroom the first night there because she felt like she could hear the ghost of old queens asking her why she was sleeping in
Josie.
It was very weird for Josephine. As emperor, the pressure to produce an heir became
increases.
Yeah. Immense. And Napoleon's family, ever helpful, they blamed Josephine.
100%.
Could not be Napoleon's fault. Napoleon's sister, helpfully, Caroline, introduced him to an 18-year-old named Eleanor Denet de la Plaine. Maybe that's how that's pronounced.
Okay.
Helpfully, Eleanor was Caroline's secretary and the mistress of Caroline's husband, who at that time was in prison for forgery.
Oh, God.
So Napoleon he thought Eleanor was terrific.
New, cute, young 18-year-old. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Nappy Bones, looking for you.
Yeah, Nappy Bones was really taken with her, enough that he rented her a house nearby so that he could visit her for 2 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
Eleanor, not such a big fan of Nappy Bones. It was rumored that she would set her clocks ahead by half an hour once he arrived while he wasn't looking. So. Mm-hmm. But in 1806, she gave birth to a son.
Oh.
She said it was Napoleon's. There were rumors it was not, but who can say?
Ooh, trashy.
So from his family's perspective, they have now proven definitively to Napoleon that he is not why he and Josephine don't have a baby. It's
right.
Josephine's fault. And it kind of became like a national issue, right? Like, once you're establishing a royal line, you can't just die.
You just put the king's head in a basket because you didn't want a royal line.
Right. Napoleon did not want to divorce or annul Josephine. No, he did not want to divorce Josephine. He did not want to annul the marriage. But, I mean, it was tricky, right? Like, Josephine knew about all these affairs, didn't seem to mind. So she was kind of helping to interview potential replacement brides.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm. It was quite awkward. They tried to establish alternate heirs so that they could stay together. So he ordered his brother, Louis. I'm so sorry to share this. He ordered his brother, Louis, to marry Josephine's daughter, Hortense.
Oh, wow.
This is very the mythology thing you had yesterday. This is a lot of shades of.
Yeah, we thought the Greeks were trashy. Wait on it.
Right. And so, like, Hortense is not Nappy Bones' kid. Anyway, it's just tricky. So neither of them wanted to marry each other, but they did. They did have two kids. They had an unhappy marriage. And when Napoleon tried to name one of their children as his heir, Louis was like, no way. My kid is not going to outrank me because all of these people are obsessed with titles.
Oh my God. This is exhausting.
So Napoleon embarks on an affair with Countess Maria Waluska, and this produces a son. And at this point, Josephine is like, ah, I really do have to step back here. So they set terms. She retained the rank of empress. Her debts were settled. She'd get 3 million francs a year.
Wow.
She'd keep all her jewelry. She keeps the house and the zoo and the gardens at Malmaison. And she submitted to a public annulment ceremony. Yeah, the Bonaparte family was there, like, rah, 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 rah. And like, Nappy Bones and Josephine were both sad. She cried.
Wow.
It was, yeah, Napoleon said, God alone knows what this resolve has cost my heart. I have found the courage to go through with it only in the conviction that it will serve the best interests of France. I have nothing but gratitude to express for the devotion and tenderness of my beloved wife. The memory of the 13 years in which she has adorned my life will be treasured by me forever.
Oh, this is heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. Yeah, I mean, she came to see him in his rooms later, and they cried, and he told her to be brave. And so,
it's for the good of France.
Yeah, like, but they remained, you know, relatively good friends for the rest of, well, anyway. So she goes back to Malmaison. Works on the gardens, works on the art collection. Napoleon made sure people would go and visit her. Like he worked hard to make sure she was not lonely and that she wanted for nothing.
Wow.
There were some conflicts. The dissolution of the Holy Roman Empire was happening at this time. And so as part of peace settlements between France and Austria, Napoleon marries again to Marie-Louise of Austria. I feel like the Austrians must be a little tired of sending their princesses to France.
You have got to be 100% right on that.
Yeah. So initially, I mean, Marie-Louise was not into this at first, but apparently they kind of, I guess Napoleon was quite the charmer with the ladies. So they did have a son, Napoleon Francis. And yeah, so the Bonaparte family eventually succeeded in getting rid of...
Wait, so the kid he has with his mistress isn't even the kid who fucking takes over that he divorces Josephine for? Mm-mm. He ends up having another kid that takes over?
Yeah, but you know...
And you just ditched your wife?
Mm-hmm.
Nappy Bones.
Nappy Bones. The things we do for power.
Yeah, for the good of fucking France.
Oh, this is good. Yeah, so we're going to talk more about the intrigue and meddling and whatever of the lives of the siblings. This whole family is a giant garbage fire, and it is kind of a thing of glory to behold.
That and I'm fantastic. Excited about it.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was amazeballs.
Big thanks to Kim S., who has been doing the heavy lift on researching this.
Those are some delicious tidbits.
Oh
thanks,
my
Kim.
God, these are these people are unbelievably trashy. So... there we
wow.
go. Kicking off Trashy Bonapartes here on the Patreon.
I love it. Well done.
Thanks.
Hope y'all enjoyed that. Nappy Bones coming back
nappy
next Wednesday.
Nappy Bones, yeah. I think we're going to have like 6 weeks of Nappy Bones.
That's
so
ugly. It's just ugly.
Get ready.
Okay. They're pretty trashy.
I think that's it.
I can't wait to see what's going to happen the next few weeks. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Y'all are the very best. It is... oh, Wednesday? Go have a great rest of the week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back on Sunday with more Trashy Divorces.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be back next week with some more Tales from Nappy Bones.
You're not kidding.
God,
they're so good.
So good. Y'all, until we talk again, keep your hands clean.
Keep your hearts trashy.
Big love. Allons-y.
Oh, allons-y. Good.
Yeah.
That's good. Okay.
Tout right. le monde.
Bye, everyone.
For the good of France. Bye, y'all.
Hey, Trash Pandas, Stacy here to share my latest Take a Mental Breather from Your Day find, Two Dots. Two Dots is a free-to-download, puzzle-based mobile game where you connect dots in relaxing puzzles while unlocking levels and collecting treasure and prizes along the way. Connect at least two adjacent dots of the same color to make a move, and remember, dots can connect horizontally and vertically, but never, ever diagonally. And as engaging as the main puzzles are, there are also side quest game modes like the scavenger hunt, where you find hidden objects amidst riotously colorful art, and classic adventure game vibes in the arcade. Each fun and relaxing Two Dots puzzle offers a new gameplay experience, plus the chance to collect trophies, medals, and other souvenirs of your adventures. As you advance through the levels, you'll earn various power-ups and special dots with new effects, like erasing all dots of a certain color or clearing a row and column simultaneously, and the colorful visuals find the perfect balance between stimulating and soothing.
Two Dots is free to download, and you can play even when you're offline. Make it a party by challenging your friends on Facebook. If you're ready to kick back and unwind, download Two Dots for free on Android and iOS and start connecting.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Hi, I'm Chris Gethard, and I'm very excited to tell you about Beautiful Anonymous, a podcast where I talk to random people on the phone. I tweet out a phone number, thousands of people try to call, I talk to one of them, they stay anonymous, I can't hang up, that's all the rules. I never know what's going to happen. We get serious ones. I've talked with meth dealers on their way to prison. I've talked to people who survived mass shootings. Crazy funny ones. I talked to a guy with a goose laugh, somebody who dresses up as a pirate on the weekends. I never know what's going to happen. It's a great show. Subscribe today. Beautiful Anonymous.
Lauren, we are sisters.
That's true.
And we host a celebrity-obsessed podcast called Pop Apologists.
We also love Taylor Swift. Chandler, how are you managing to cope while we await Taylor's new album?
Look, I want to be put into a medically induced coma and wake up on April 19th, but I'm not sure my insurance is going to cover it.
Join us on our pop culture podcast, Pop Apologists, where we will be dishing on all things celebrity news and deep diving every word and note of Taylor's new album.
Pop Apologists.
Pop Apologists.
Today's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check them out at betterhelp.com/trashy.
Stacey, both you and I have benefited from therapy in our lives, and over the last couple of years, I've appreciated my BetterHelp counselor so much.
Therapy can be a little like scheduled maintenance on your car, keeping everything serviced to prevent bigger issues down the road, or like the quick check you do before making a big road trip. Making sure those tires are inflated and your fluids are topped up is not that unlike strategizing with your therapist to make the most of something stressful like a job interview.
Think of therapy like routine maintenance for your emotional and mental wellness. It doesn't mean something's wrong, it means you're investing in yourself to keep your mind healthy. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to.
It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours. Why invest in everything else and not your mind?
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Trashy Divorces listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/trashy.
That's BetterHelp, BETTERHELP, betterhelp.com/trashy.
Hey, Trash Panda Nation, let's everyone just take a minute, give yourselves credit for getting to today, and now we cue Sir Elton John.
I'm still standing.
Would you like to say that you are standing better than I ever did about your personal finances? Our friends at the Oak Tree Group are ready and willing to help you.
The mission of this all-female firm is to guide you through all phases of your financial journey using an intuitive and holistic approach.
Best of all, Oak Tree Group is offering our Trashy Divorces listeners a free one-hour consultation with no obligation to talk about your financial concerns. Give the Oak Tree Group a call today at 770-319-1700 to set up your appointment.
Again, that number is 770-319-1700. And you can always visit www.theoaktreegroup.net for more information. Alicia, did you tell me to put on my fury pants for this edition?
There's so much in this story
grab
for
your
you
hankies.
To love. You're going to love it.
Oh, okay.
Welcome to Grab Your Hankies. Mm-hmm. This week, we were going to get into Henry III, because the whole thing is grab your hankies, but no.
Because last week you did Henry I and II.
Right, but we can't get to Henry. We left a little on the table last week with Kings Richard and John that I feel that we'd be remiss if we didn't. So today, grab your hankies. Oh, brother. Oh, my. We're going to back up the bus just a little bit and spend a little time with these two brothers looking at the time periods-ish from 1189 to about 1216.
Okay.
We're just going to do a quick deeper dive.
Sure.
Before we get to Hank III.
Okay.
Okay. So many trashy things are about to happen. Okay, from last week's episode, the stage is set. The year is 1189. Hank II, dead. Son of Hank II, Richard, is now king. Dick the One. Just Dick right now. There's no one.
Okay, okay.
Dickie. Dickie's king. Dickie's the son of Henry II, sure, but he's also the son of Eleanor of Aquitaine. And he's been brought up in this lusty troubadour culture, and it's all about romance. And, I mean, this is Richard the Lionheart, right? He wants to be this jukebox hero. He wants to be the storybook hero and the inspirer of all the legends, and he's really the very much the creator of his own myth. He's not very lion-hearted at all. He's kind of a dick. He's way more concerned with his own image and reputation than actually doing anything good for the country of England. But
funny, that's not how the story goes normally. Okay.
No, but like, all right, dick. The brother that comes after him, John, is truly the worst. So, it, you know, comparatively. Richard looks like a Lionheart after King John.
And this is the King John of Robin Hood legend, yes?
Yes.
That King John, okay.
The very factual Disney tale of Robin Hood.
Right.
Watch it.
That's, we've all seen it.
Everything I'm saying you can find in Robin Hood right now.
Okay. Animated.
I love that movie. It makes me so happy. Okay, so Dick One, Richard, in charge of England, but he has no intention of actually staying in England to be the king, because he has things to do, like go on crusade. So Richard has never had any other idea in his mind than leaving his mom, Eleanor, to run the country while he is going off on crusade. Like, Eleanor, when she was Queen of France, went on crusade in her younger days. So he's just, you know, reliving Mama's footsteps.
It's what you do.
Dick One comes to London for his coronation, and that's about it. He's there to get the crown, but also he needs cash to support his crusade into Jerusalem to take God's country back for the good Christian people.
Sure.
All right.
Yeah, not a cheap proposition.
No, crusades are expensive. Mm-hmm. They're very expensive. Mm-hmm. And here's the irony. The guy in charge of Jerusalem at the time already lets Christians in on like a day pass. But Richard is going to crusade so he can win Jerusalem, which he does. But if you want to keep Jerusalem, you have to stay in Jerusalem.
Weird that.
And Dickie ain't going to do that. So he walks out like, okay, great. I guess we keep our day passes, which is what we had.
He doesn't want to install his mom.
Well, his mom is busy. She's got
running England.
Well, yes, but she's also got another plan coming soon. Anyway, Richard needs money because crusades are expensive. Dick does not care about London. He will say that he would have sold London if he could have found a buyer for it. He spends a total in his 10-year reign. He spends 6 months within the confines of England. Okay.
Okay. Those Frenchmen, man.
No, he's a French king, right? Mm-hmm. And so I want you to know that England at this point is still run by France. We have French nobles. Now, Henry II has encouraged intermarrying his French nobles with English women. So English identity is beginning to take shape now, but it's not going to be fully cemented until the end of the story. But kind of put that as a post-it note in the back of your trashy brain. Okay. Dick is not in England. Dick is on crusades. And, oh my God, wasted time, wasted money, whatever. On the way home from the crusades, right, Dick is captured. He's captured dressed as a kitchen maid in Vienna. He's held for ransom, which Mama Eleanor pays, right, to get Dick back where he will remain king of England, but not actually in England until 1199, when Dick is shot by an arrow because Mr. Storybook Hero thinks his shit is so unstinkable and he's so untouchable that he doesn't wear armor. He doesn't do the things that you do if you're going to go...
He has the heart of a lion, Alicia.
Well, the heart of the lion was
easily pierced by an arrow.
So he's out. Like, he believes his damn hype so much, but arrows are arrows, you fool. So 10-year reign, no kids. Now, historians like to banter about Dick I. Oh, he was gay. Medieval men have a different relationship than, I mean, it was not uncommon for men to drink from the same cup and eat from the same plate and share beds to, like, different time.
Yeah, it's because they didn't have a, yes, I agree.
For as much as history records actually gay kings that we have previously talked about and are going to talk about, Dick I isn't gay. He's got some illegitimate kids. He also has a wife. What? Richard the Lionheart was married? I've never heard of a wife. Let me tell you, he's probably never heard of her either from the way that he treats her.
Wow.
Let me tell you about the queen that no one's ever heard of. Okay. Queen of England, Berengaria.
Does not ring a bell.
Berengaria has no recorded birthday because she's a girl.
Women, yeah.
But she's a high-born girl. Her mother is the daughter of the King of Castile. Her father is the ruler of Navarre. Her dad, new name for you here, is Sancho VI. Haven't had a Sancho yet.
No, that's new.
Okay. Now, Navarre, her country, gets battered around like a fucking cat toy on the French map for centuries between... not only the warring counties in France. So when I say warring counties, we have all the counties that make up regions of Navarre and Anjou and Normandy and Flanders, like blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, just the little principalities.
Right. Navarre at the time is not a big deal at the time of Berengaria's birth. It's not at its apex in power or status because Navarre really is like the cat toy. It gets claimed, it gets reclaimed, it gets shuffled off 1,000 times. But it's a nice life for a girl. But her mom dies when she's young. And so it leaves her with all these queenly responsibilities. So by the time Dick I is coming up into England, Navarre has redeemed its reputation a little bit. It is a little bit more needed as a strategic place on the map. Also, Berengaria comes with an enormous dowry. Colossally big. And as you've heard, crusades
I was
do
gonna
not
say,
pay for themselves.
You're going to hop off to the Holy Land with all your nobles.
Well, Berengaria looks like a better bride, but there's a problem. Dick I is already engaged. He's already betrothed. He has another bride in place. Her name is Alice. She is the sister of the King of France.
This seems problematic, potentially.
This is Philip II. And Philip II and Dick I have been in negotiations for a hot minute. Who gets what? If I marry her, who gets the land? If we have sons, how does all of her land that she has and my, like, you know, negotiations? Phil II wants nothing to do with this marriage. It would make you far too powerful. Phil II is finally convinced. And then, oh my God, Dick I goes through all these like hurdles to get permission. Like, it is a fight for Dick to even think about marrying Alice. He has to convince Philip. He has to, it's a thing. But then Dick starts hearing the skinny. but all this land and money that perhaps an alternate bride comes with Berengaria.
Navarre who?
Yeah, so she's sent for. Technically, she's not sent for. Eleanor of Aquitaine has a job. And Eleanor of Aquitaine has to go to fetch the girl. So Eleanor of Aquitaine travels like months and months to go fetch her. And then they spent months and months together, Berengaria and Eleanor, on the way back getting to know each other. Because you don't do anything without Mama Eleanor's permission. I guess Eleanor gives it. She gives her approval because the wedding is on. But that causes a whole fallout with Philip II of France. And they are going to fight for a really long time about this. The wedding does happen. It's a spectacle. Hello, new wife. See you in about 2 years because I'm going on crusade. So poor Berengaria gets locked up with Dick's sister Joanna in this castle. Like they can't even, in hostile territory, they can't even open the curtain window to see like what the weather is outside. This is the most boring life. What puzzle are we going to do again today? Like they can't go outside.
More needlepoint?
More needlepoint. Like it's terrible. But this will make Berengaria and Joanna very, very close, right? Because they're holed up together.
They're being held captive together effectively.
That's exactly it. Okay, so it's boring. But Dick won no love for his wife. He never sees her. He's cheating across the European continent on his big crusade, which isn't as holy as he makes it out to be. But anyway, Berengaria's kind of done. Dick gets captured. She's like, I'm out of here. Mama Eleanor, my mother-in-law, is in charge of everything. I'm going to go back to Aquitaine. Forget this. I'm out. I got other things to spend my time on that aren't this.
Is this Berengaria or Eleanor? Okay.
Yeah. Until like 1194. So the Bishop of England pulls Dick back. And he's like, listen, man, everybody's talking about you all the time. You need to get with your wife. You need to have an heir. You need to deny all other women. So Dick One goes to this whole like, oh, I'm in love with you and brings
flowers,
Berengaria back and flowers and diamonds and candy. But it's all very short lived because honestly, Navarre is no longer needed. That's how quick Navarre cat toy batted around. That's how quick it changes. And there are no kids. So whose fault is it? Berengaria.
Obviously, it's hers.
She is the woman to blame. So Dick the One is going to die in 1199. With the I don't need to wear armor move.
Look at my lion heart.
And Berengaria is the forgotten queen of England. Nobody remembers her. Nobody bothers to tell her Dick's dead. She finds out from a passing priest. Like she's going to check her mail and there's, you know, Father Brown driving by like, damn shame about your husband. And she's like, what are you talking about? She's not invited to the funeral.
I'm free.
She participates in nothing state-oriented because she doesn't even get the news until Father Brown's like, oh, it's taking flowers to Miss Marple in your village. My husband's what? Yeah.
High murder rate there for some reason. Mysterious.
Oddly enough, she is an English queen that during her time as its reigning monarch never sets foot inside the confines of England.
Weird. So she just lives across the channel.
Yeah, I mean, she's, yeah. But I mean, most of English monarchy is taking place in France.
Right.
Until
right.
Henry III. Okay. Good Lord. All right, so now King John, who is in charge, and he's coming into detail, but I want to wrap up with Berengaria, because nobody ever gives her enough credit, nor do we know her name. King John is terrible to her. He's terrible to everybody. But King John is going to take all of her dower lands and her money too. Now, Pope Innocent III is going to come back into play in a minute. He's not innocent. Pope Innocent is a dick.
I spotted that right away. Don't worry.
Pope Innocent will try to make some headway with King John into not leaving Berengaria destitute. And so John's like, great, I'll give her back her lands, but I'm going to take all the money from her lands. Like, it's terrible. This is a move he likes to play. It is not until the reign of Henry III that all of the back debt that she's owed is corrected, she'll live until 1230. Like, she's going to live a long time after the death of Richard the First.
A long and happier life.
Well, long and happier, always in debt. There's a little bit, she's, Richard as well, they both are like this. They both have a very anti-Semitic reputation, because in order to get by, Berengaria is borrowing from Jewish money people, which, I mean, she's kind of terrible in her own right, but she will, before she dies, build a monastic house, but she dies like a month before it's consecrated in 1230. Anyway. Berengaria, the forgotten queen nobody's ever heard of. No power, no kids, no agency. At least until her husband's dead, and then that's still not a lot because you're subject to men batting on your behalf. Now the year is 1199.
New king in town.
Yeah, the king is dead. Long live the king. Now we get to King John. Johnny Rotten.
John the First.
John the Nothing has happened after John. That's how terrible a King John is there's never been another one. We're going to talk about another king that there's never been another of right after this, but...
Well, and we did last week, Stephen, the redheaded guy, yeah.
Yeah, you're about to hear about your French King Louis, who's king of England. Did you know that England had a King Louis?
Don't.
Only one of those two. Okay, but King John, Johnny Rotten. God, he's... There's only one of them. That's how rotten he is. Okay, everybody take a deep breath. Oh, God. Henry VIII learned it by watching King John. That's all I have to say. There is a role model for Henry VIII. I can't wait to hear how many repetitions that y'all are going to hear in this. John is the last son of Henry II and Eleanor of Aquitaine. Henry II dies. Dick I dies. Logically, the crown should go to John, right? I mean, not exactly. John's terrible. And even when Henry was alive, he wanted no part in John having any kind of power. Because John is kind of whiny and kind of slimy and kind of greedy, and he's petulant and he's ambitious. It is every bit of the worst trait you could ever imagine in a ruler wrapped up into one ruler.
Did he have Twitter?
Henry knows his son. John's name, like, because you know, like, William the Bastard. Everybody's got kind of a William Rufus. Everybody has a name before they get their king name. John is John Lackland because he lacks land. The only fights Henry II gets into are about John's. All John wants is, what land do I get, Dad? What do I get when you die? Which I'm sure makes your ruler feel really secure.
Yeah.
John lacks land. Dude, you get nothing. You get nothing because you're a simp, man. You're terrible. Okay. But Henry II tries. When Prince John is like 16, he's going to send him over to Ireland to be king of Ireland. Now, Henry II doesn't really own Ireland. He doesn't really have the right to do that. So it's kind of a stick. I'm not going to say it's a great situation for Prince John to go into.
Seems tenuous.
But Prince John gets there. I'm 16. I'm king of Ireland. You know, Henry II wants to test him out. Let's see what you can do, son.
Go conquer Ireland for me, son.
No, 16-year-old fucking teenager John arrives and makes fun of all the Irish nobles because they have beards. Every beard joke, he's pulling their beards. Doesn't go great with the Irish nobles and barons.
I'm surprised.
John is back inside of a year.
Wow.
Okay. No one wants John to be anywhere near power.
I'm surprised he survived that. I feel like there would be reason to take a more permanent solution, but...
Okay, so Henry's dead. Dick assumes the throne. The same year Richard I ascends, John is going to marry. His wife is Isabella of Gloucester. She can trace her line to Henry I, although Isabella and John are second half cousins, royal interbreeding at its best. They've been married a decade by the time that Dick I bites it. No heir in sight. No kids. No issue. Once again, whose fault is it? This time Isabella's.
Oh, okay, yeah. All
she's right. The woman to blame. Isabella.
Sorry, I thought you were still talking about...
Berengaria?
Yeah, there you go.
Nope.
Okay, so both of these brothers have no children.
Oh, John's going to get kids.
Okay.
His first wife is not the wife that sticks around. Hold up. It's about to get trashy. Okay, because John is a king, and it's clearly my wife's fault, even though we've been married a decade that...
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my fault, because I'm a horn dog.
Sure.
John will sleep with anyone. But Dick dies, and John wants to take over, but there's actually another potential claimant. See, Henry II had another son, Geoffrey, and even though Geoffrey's long dead, Geoffrey has a son, Arthur, Duke of Brittany. He's about 15 years old.
The Brits do like their Arthurs.
The King of France has blessed Arthur, 15-year-old Arthur, Duke of Brittany, to go be king. I will support you in this. Let's continue to fight.
That's some powerful backing.
Yeah, exactly. He's young. But yes, I can be contention to the king until Prince, now King John, takes Arthur to the river and drowns him. Fucking Catfish John, man.
Oh my God.
I'm singing the nitty-gritty dirt band now. But yeah, Catfish John.
So this is
maybe
his uncle.
Prisons locks him up. But this is like in a Princes in the Tower move before Richard III does it. Prince John does it with Arthur in contention for the English crown.
There's evidence that Richard III did no such thing.
No, exactly. But Prince John does.
Yeah.
Like all of a sudden, this Prince Arthur, we don't know where he went. We never heard from him again. So he's laying at the bottom of a river because Catfish John killed him.
Crocodile ate him.
Anyway, child murder is not a great look. We'll put it that way. But John is now king and has no heirs, which is going to become important in short order. So John's like, maybe this decade-long marriage to Isabella, you know what? It's probably not even lawful after all. I love the look you're making on your face. We have the laws of consanguinity and all that. Tut, tut. I would like an annulment, please. Which John will get, but instead of letting... Henry VIII learned it by watching John. Instead of letting Isabella of Gloucester, just go back to Gloucester, be free, maybe get married again, have a happy life away from his petulant, whiny ass face. He locks her up. He imprisons her. No remarriage for you. No freedom. I'm going to keep you locked up.
I mean, did her head stay attached to her neck?
Yeah, but okay. we're not done with Isabella of Gloucester quite yet. Okay, but what to do? There's one wife locked up. I must find a new bride that can fruit children. Now, there's a plan in place. King John has it in the works to marry a princess of Portugal, right? And this is a pretty good match. Everybody's on board with it.
I'll say Portugal kicks ass.
Right. But, there's also a youth.
Good fortified wines? Come on.
Now, Portugal's out. There's a young girl. Her name is Isabella of Angoulême. And when she was 8, she was engaged to and already kind of married the son of this other French noble. Like the first ceremony had been completed. All they're waiting for her to do is turn 12 so they can do the consummation part.
I have nothing to say here.
Okay, but her first marriage combines a lot of land and a lot of power, and she's already married, right? But, King John is like, she's almost 12 now. Maybe she's 10. He's 35.
Oh, God.
Okay. And I'm in negotiations to marry this Portuguese princess, but I am a horn dog, and she's going to be 12 soon, and she's described as like Helen of Troy. She's a great beauty. Or will be a great beauty, you know, when she's out of puberty. And he's not even really divorced from the first Isabella yet. There's no process being followed. It's just his, like, sheer lust, and I'm king, and I get what I want. And sure enough, a 12-ish-year-old Isabella will wed a 35-year-old John in 1200. It is scandalous. It is rule-breaking. Norm-breaking.
Bigamy!
Causes a lot of shit to go down. They're still fighting about Alice and Richard from a deck. Like, they're still fighting about Arthur, the Duke of Brittany. They're just pick a reason. England and France are fighting, but they're
all on the same side, but they're not. Oh my God. All right. This causes a lot of shit to go down because Isabella was already married. What is wrong with you, John? And the French king is pissed. And he's going to take away all of John's lands in France. Isabella's sent back with her father, and she is rescued. But, I mean, rebellions and blah, blah, blah. Okay, remember Berengaria? Now, she's been allied with John, even though, like, she's trying to get her lands and her money. But now she's like, screw that. So she switches sides and goes back with Philip II of France, which is a big deal. And everything's going terrible for John, but it's going terrible for John because of his own actions.
Not to mention the band of merry men in the woods.
No way. No, it's his own actions. I mean, the merry men.
No, I feel like they. I feel like they pop up because of his own actions, but...
Okay. After all the terrible things I've already said about John, here is what I think is singularly the trashiest. He is also a cheap bastard. And even though he dotes on his wife, his 12-year-old wife, he's a cheap bastard. And he doesn't want to put up enough money for her to have her own household. So Catfish John, Johnny Rotten, gets a really good idea. And he is going to send Isabella, new wife, guess where to stay? Locked up with Isabella, his old wife.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And his sister, I guess. Is his sister still locked up in there?
No, that was Joanna and Berengaria.
Oh, okay. Different.
So now ex-wife Isabella has some company with 12-year-old new wife Isabella.
Have they considered growing their hair very long?
It's terrible.
I'm starting to see where those stories come from.
Well, then they start sharing stories. So John's like, shit, I gotta get her out of there. So John will send Isabella to one of his nobles' house, but it's a noble whose wife John is fucking. It's one of his mistresses. King John, I want to let you know there's a reason. There's only been one.
No John the Second.
Nope. Okay. So John's sleeping around everywhere, and like, he's sleeping with all of his nobles' wives, which his nobles are tending to like less and less as time goes on. Isabella, once she can bear children, does. 5 kids. Henry, first son, who's going to be Henry III. 3 daughters, who all marry extremely well. The first is Joanna, who will be Queen of Scotland. The second is Isabella, who will be Holy Roman Empress. She has another spare son, Richard, as well. But Isabella the Younger, she's young. She's peddled this man. He's a child predator. So after kids, maybe she sleeps around a little bit too. But all of this is turned against her because now the rumor is she slept with her half-brother. Where have you heard that before?
Yeah, this really...
So many parallels. Like, they learned it by watching you. And, okay... Oh my God. So now Isabel is a Jezebel and a harlot and terrible, but King John is terrible and the war with France continues. And now all the fucking English barons are pissed. John loses this war with France. The English barons are still mad. And who is it to blame?
The guys in Sherwood Forest.
Isabella the Younger.
Oh.
Yeah. Still, it's always the woman's fault.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So this is where shit gets sticky. Because the Pope is like, England, I'm done with you. Prince John, King John, you're terrible. So I'm going to step in and just be in charge of England now. And I'm going to appoint a new bishop. This is Pope Innocent III, who was trying to help Berengaria. But King John doesn't really like this new plan of the Pope stepping in, and he certainly doesn't like the bishop. So Pope Innocent is going to excommunicate John, or anyone that actually talks to John, or looks at John, or assists John, or hands John a glass of water. Excommunication. John's reign is not going great. Jesus. By 1213, even John is like wanting to sell out and negotiating with the emir of Muslim countries.
Okay.
Like, I will sell you England. Please just take this off my hands. What kind of price can I get for my country?
Want to be a king?
Oh my God. Pope is done. And so he puts this Englishman Langton in charge of being a bishop. And Langton is like, fuck yeah, dude, this is great because it's an Englishman. And now is a chance to not only shape some laws for the people, but we've had a terrible King Dick one. King John is terrible. This reign has been going on now, shit ass, 15 years. He's quadruple taxing us. Like, we're paying for his largesse and extravagance. He's not even morally good. Like, okay, let's set some laws in place.
Drive through Sherwood Forest. In your cart, in your carriage.
Langton, the Englishman, is like, all right. It's not just the people who need laws, but we need some laws to set in about abuses of power of the monarchy. Welcome to 1215 and the Magna Carta.
I recall this from history class.
That's it, right?
The nobles force him to sign this charter, right?
Correct, which is technically like a peace treaty because everybody's still at war. I mean, technically the Magna Carta is... we're going to live under these laws and you're going to live under these laws and let's just call peace because we've been at war now a lot of years.
Right. So a settlement of mutual restraint.
Right. John, not a fan of Magna Carta, and neither is the Pope. Pope Innocent, when he gets word of my buddy Langton, who I set up to do the things I needed you to be my puppet, and you just decide to be an Englishman and make your own laws... nah, dude, you're excommunicated.
Well, I'm...
or recalled. I'm sorry, Langton got recalled.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure that any document restraining a sovereign is a threat to every other sovereign. Like, this is not... the Pope cannot tolerate the idea that, like, the College of Cardinals might sit him down and be like, actually, you're not allowed to do X,
not
Y, and Z.
Do that. Well, because the Pope thinks he's the King of England.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. It's all terrible.
The Pope thinks he's God's vassal on earth and the exactly. King of everything.
All right. Langton out. King John is going to take back over. But now you have a bunch of barons. All of this period is known as the First Barons War. There is a Second Barons War that happens. But now the barons are like, we've had enough. We finally got something implemented with Magna Carta. And... now that's ripped up and nobody's watching out for us. And hey, you know what? Maybe we need a better king. All right. The barons have an idea. And it is to get Louis, future king of France, son of the current king of France, in to be king of England. Okay. Now this invitation of a foreign ruler to come be the English king doesn't really seem that odd to people of England then, right? The nobility is all still French-speaking. They hold a lot of lands, not only in England, but in France. The Norman conquest, 150 years before. The barons can't get what we want from King John. It is only the next logical move to go back to France to be like, hey, anybody want to be king? And there's Louis, just right there. He's 29. He has significant military experience from the previous French wars. His prowess in battle, he's nicknamed Louis the Lion. The only reason Richard wants to be the fucking Lionheart is because Louis is the Lion. It's a rebranding. Oh my God. All right. Compared to King John, Louis looks pretty good. He's got a wife. She's ambitious. Blanche of Castile, who is also the niece of King John, right? It's just made in heaven.
Yeah.
So he's a strong claimant to the throne anyway because he's married to the niece of the king.
Sure.
And they already have two kids, Philip and Louis. And
oh, that's perfect. Heirs.
You oh bring my heirs. Gosh. And maybe like, okay, we'll have one inherit England and one inherit France. And
perfect.
Awesome.
Wow.
Okay.
What could be better?
Barons got it all figured out, right?
Brooke Shields will one day descend the line.
That's it. So the barons going to head over to France. They're going to get Louis. Hey, man, you want to be our king?
Let's hop on a boat.
And Louis is like, yeah, sounds pretty super cool. Let's go. I'll be your king. But then it's not cool because Louis as King of fucking England, appointed King of England, is now appointing all of his guys from France, Flanders, and all the barons who are now a little bit more English than and a little less French are like,
wait a minute.
This is not why we brought you to England, dude.
I thought I would retain all of the power I previously had. I did not know you would be bringing your own.
Well, no, they want the power back of Magna Carta and more, right? Like, this is all, this is the Baron's War.
Right, but I mean, he's bringing his principles over, mm-hmm. so that's the power cell that they thought they would be.
Okay, but King John is still alive. King Louis defeats...
How are these guys so bad at this?
King Louis defeats... King John. So King John is on the run, okay?
Like, you don't bring a fresh king in while the other one's still hanging out. Like,
but there is one. This is why you... Okay, hold on. Oh, oh God, this is my juice, man. I love it.
These
okay.
barons don't deserve the Magna Carta.
Okay, so King John is on the run, and King John is eventually going to be done in by a bunch of fucking monks. Oh, brothers. Wait, okay. So he's fleeing, and he stops at this monastery to rest. Then all these brothers are like, hey, King John, we've been working on this new brew, this new beer. You want to taste it? And King John does. And he gets a fever and dysentery and then death.
Okay. On behalf of homebrewers everywhere, I would like to note that those monks poisoned him on purpose. That is
100%.
Brewing does a miraculous job at cleaning whatever pathogens may be growing in whatever water.
Death by beer. 1216.
Death by poisoning.
Death by poisoning via beer.
Sure.
1216, King John out.
Well, monkshood. She's brewing up some monkshood. You want to try this?
Hemlock. What ups? It's fine.
It's good. It's good for you.
All right, so King John is dead. God bless. King John is dead. But all right, now so we have King Louis, the French-English king, and the barons are like, what the fuck? What have we done? This is terrible. Barons, we need a new plan.
Oh, my God.
Think.
I think that their thinking is part of the problem.
They get an idea.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So guys, hear me out. Hear me out, everybody. I know it's a little weird. We've never had a child king before. But what if we set up Henry, the 9-year-old son of King John, to be king? And maybe just in charge of him, we put a protector.
So a regent.
A regent. We put a protector, a regent in charge. And then we just take control over shit.
What happens to Louis? The military leader.
Louis is told, hey man, we're going to let you go, but we need you to go back and say you were never King of England. You are absolved from our records. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. You're not allowed to claim it. You're not allowed to say you ever were King of England. This was all just a really bad one-night stand. I need you to get your clothes on, and I need you to slink back to France and pretend like it all never happened.
Terrible John was actually king the whole time until the monks tried their new beer on him.
No, they had to unanoint. Like, he... Okay, so King Louis was never anointed. He was appointed, which is why he technically doesn't count. Same with fucking Steve. Same with Stephen. He was appointed, not anointed.
Okay.
It's this whole scurrilous sort of fine line. But yeah, Louis, get your clothes. I need you to get out through the window. Go back to France. Please don't bother us anymore. Now, Louis is going to bother them plenty because he's going to be king of France. But
so you're saying he didn't just forgive and forget?
No, Louis out. But this is where the shift happens. So 1216, this is where the shift happens in England, where the French now are perceived as foreigners. This is sort of England claiming into, for the first time, sort of a national, the French are not us. We're different than the French. They are foreigners. It is now cementing into some kind of something. All right.
Well, I imagine on the ground, too, because it's not like there was a unified England prior to the Norman conquest. Like it was still tons of separate sort of like identifiable community. I mean, we would probably map it to like Native American tribes. Mm-hmm. So probably over the ensuing century and a half or whatever, like all of those distinctions have been sort of gradually ironed out. People have been brought into power. People, right? Like, that's kind of what you do with your nobility.
Well, this is what Henry III is going to do. Like, he is going to sort of try to cohesively pull together. Like, Magna mm-hmm. Carta reinstated, like, I mean, he's nine, so he's not going to do it anytime
soon. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
King Henry, just looking ahead, Henry III has the fourth longest reign of any British monarch so far.
Okay.
He has the longest reign of any medieval king. Not that it was not without controversy, but that's next week's story.
Sure. But plenty of time, plenty of decades to play power politics in the different parts of England where you need to.
He does.
Yeah.
So now we have a nine-year-old Henry, King of England, Louis, booted back to France, which is where we'll start in the next Grab Your Hankies with Henry III, and then the Eddies are coming. So that's kind of fun. I don't know if you want to follow up, though, on Second Isabella. Isabella, wife number two of Angoulême.
Okay.
Okay. Now Isabella's a widow. She's a young widow. Her nine-year-old son Henry is sent to London to be king. There is a regency council to guide him. It's not her. And she's in her 20s. And she's unpopular. She's not really interested in government. And, you know, she's going to go back to Angoulême. She wants her dower lands. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that. Why don't you come back to England? And she's like, nah, man, I'm not going to do that. I think I'm going to get married. Okay. And a scandal. This cements her scandalous reputation. This could be really confusing, so I don't want it to confuse you, but she's going to marry again to the most inappropriate person she could marry anywhere. So remember when Isabella was 12? She had that first, we're almost married, we're just waiting for me to get legal. Isabella also has a daughter, Joanna, who will go on to be Queen of Scotland. But Joanna, before she's Queen of Scotland, is already betrothed. She is betrothed to Hugh the X, who is the son of the man that Isabella was originally engaged to when she was 8. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Bygones.
Oh, no. Oh, no, because Isabella of Angoulême is going to snatch her baby daughter Joanna's fiancé out from her, and Isabella's going to marry Hugh the X instead. She steals her daughter's fiancé.
We're not at the Plantagenets yet, are we?
We're in the Plantagenets,
are we?
Yes.
Plantagenet, yeah. Family values, babe.
Yeah. So the son of the man that her daughter is betrothed to, Isabella's like, nah, I'm going to go ahead and marry him. This is, okay, technically, according to the church, this is incest. Because you were already married to this guy's father back in, like, canon law. We can't help it that King John is a fuck up and decided to break all the rules. Canon law is still canon law.
Tricky.
Isabella and Hugh X will ally a lot of money and a lot of power. They go on to have, like, another 13 kids. Good Lord. They're close in age. They're equal in wealth and status. It's fine. But even Isabella at this time, because England's pissed, they're like, what? And she's like, oh, I'm doing it for England. My daughter was just too young to marry this guy. And I'm doing it for you. And they're mad. They absolutely take her dower lands. She's got a little bit more agency being married to Hugh, but good Lord, Isabella still sort of thinks she's queen, even though she's not. She ends up standing at an event. This is, God, like 1241, and it's unacceptable to her. she's trying to get her youngest son to be the one that takes over with the line, but that doesn't work. Anyway, Isabella of Angoulême. Still, King John stole her, and then she stole her kid's fiancé. Okay. Anyway, she dies in 1242. Let's see, she will pass away kind of in obscurity. She dies in the same abbey as Eleanor of Aquitaine, her mother-in-law did. This is long into the reign of Henry III, who we will be talking about next time on Grab Your Hankies. Richard and John are just so trashy.
No, that seems like it was a critical part of the story. I think you can skip those two.
Well, and then I just got into it. And I'm like, let's just give them their own episode.
Sounds good.
Anyway, back next time with Hank 3 and however many Eddies are coming at the time. Because we go Hank 3, then Eddie 1, Eddie 2, Eddie 3.
I was going to say there are three. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we get into the Henry dad of Henry 4, 5, and 6. Oh, gosh, y'all. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Y'all are the best. Have an amazing day. I hope you enjoyed that episode.
Keep your hands clean.
Oh, keep your hearts trashy. And for real, if you want the documentary of this, please check out the 1970s film by Disney, Robin Hood.
It's real history.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest. God, I love that movie. All right, darlings, have a wonderful week. Catch you on the flip. Keep it trashy.
Bye.
Bye. And thanks to you for listening. Trashy Divorces is a Hemlock Creatives production, created and produced right here in Atlanta, Georgia, by us, Stacy and Alicia, with a little research and writing help from the brilliant Melissa O.
Our art is by Sydney V. Smith. That's Sydney V. Smith at carbonmade.com. And our music is used with permission of Ratsy. Check her out at Ratsy's store on Instagram, and definitely drop into Ratsy's store anytime you're in Oberlin, Ohio.
You can contact us at trashydivorces@gmail.com or find us on the World Wide Web at trashydivorces.com.
If you need more trash candy in your life, our Patreon community includes some of the very best humans around and thousands of hours of bonus content at every level of support. Join the fun at patreon.com/trashydivorces.
Interested in some Trashy Divorces swag? Check out our merch shop and Trash Panda Enthusiasm Society at bit.ly/trashygear.
Want to advertise with us? Reach out to sales@advertisecast.com for more information.
And last but not least, come play with us on social media. I keep most of our Trashy Divorces Instagram hopping. Stacy and I share it up over on Facebook, including our Trashy Divorces podcast discussion group. Come join us over there, and thanks again, everybody, for listening.
Keep it trashy, y'all.